Welcome to another Battle Babe Supplemental. Today, we are lucky to have the two main admins for the Calgary Battletech League joining us. Hello, boys.
Heidi ho.
Howdy, howdy.
So the first person that was talking is Lee. He's a longtime league member, as well as Brett, who was the second person speaking there. And they are both... I don't even know what I was going to say there. That's how good I am right now. And I also have my lovely co-host, Battle Babe 2, with us as well.
Yeah, that's lovely. Not sure, but I'm here.
I think you're lovely. I may not be talking about looks, but I think you're lovely. No, haha. I was expecting something from one of the boys.
I'm keeping my mouth shut on that one. We are technically, or I am at least, technically within swinging distance. So.
Having seen all of her, I can say lovely.
Okay, well, today we have the boys here to talk about the Battletech universe and to try and help explain a few of the different things that I'm always saying, I don't know about. What do you know, Laura, when we do our book talk?
And I don't know much more than you.
Exactly. So we have our two of our go-to people for data and information. So hopefully you guys will stick around and watch with us.
I'll be information. Lee, you can be data.
Okay. Can't I be data? He's cooler.
Yeah.
Nerd flag fly.
Well, he is anatomically correct.
True.
And functional.
He's better atomically correct than Ken is. But anyways, as we digress, hope you guys enjoy and let us know what you think. So we're here to talk about the Battletech universe and kind of understand a little bit more about how it is made up in actual physical space, not just how the history goes, which of course it's not real because the year is 3024 in the book. I'm assuming, do any of you guys read minds or tell the future?
No.
Last time I checked, nope.
Only when it's written out ahead of time.
So we don't know if this stuff is actually going to happen. So it is completely fictional. And this is just one special universe in the future. And I know when we're talking about it, Laura, I get really stuck on what, like when it says periphery states or it says the successor states, I'm like, huh? I don't understand that.
Well, and then we have a hard time visualizing where planets are in relation to each other.
Exactly, right? Talking about the Oberon 5, where Hendrik is from, and then we have that Count Droku, but I know that's not right. Count Ryko, or I have it right here in my book somewhere. Again, going back, I don't know where it's written. Ryko, I think it is. R-O-C-O-H. R-I-C-O-H. Ricola.
No, Rico, like from Starship Troopers.
Anyways, it's Duke Ricol.
Rico? How is it spelled?
Ricol. R-I-C-O-L.
Ricol. Okay.
The Red Duke.
Yes. The Red Duke. No, the Red Hunter. Specifically, he is the Red Hunter in the successor states.
Okay.
At this point in time in the books.
Yes. This is the beginning, right? So looking at all of that, I guess let's start with the successor states, because like I was saying to Lee earlier when we were talking about it, I'm like, okay, well, I know there's like the Lyran Commonwealth, the Draconis Combine, and then we have like the House of Successor States. And Lee clearly informed me that like the Lyran Commonwealth and the Draconis Combine and all of them are the successor states.
Yes. So the slight bit of confusion is that you're mixing the houses as being their own separate places versus the successor states. The successor states are the countries, for lack of a better term. The houses are the names of the ruling families. So House Steiner is the ruling family of the Lyran Commonwealth.
And House Davian rules over the Federated Sons.
Yeah. So that's the one where I think a little bit of confusion is happening there, is that you're thinking that the houses are their own separate places, and they're not. They're basically just the names of the ruling families.
okay, that makes way more sense to me. I'm like, I don't. So like it's kind of like taking, so say the Lyran Commonwealth would be, like you were saying, a country. And then each of the successor states, the houses would be like each successor state would have one successor house or a house. Or is there multiple in each successor state?
Well, that depends on which state you're talking about. If you're looking at the purple part of the map, the Free Worlds League is a conglomeration, much like a grouping of democracies.
So like the United Nations is made up of a bunch of countries.
But it is overruled by House Merrick, which sort of is like an elected, but not really elected. He's not as much a monarch.
So more like the Canadian government.
Yeah.
We have a prime minister and we have the Alberta the premiers.
The kind of, it would be better to put it down as the European Union with a elected head of state.
But it's hereditary too.
Well, that's where it comes. Like, I was just thinking, think old Scotland, right? There would be Scotland, and then they had, before England got involved, right? They had their own king and stuff, which would have been the main house. And then underneath them, there's the Cameron clan and the this clan and the this clan. So kind of like Scotland would be like, say, you said the Federated Sons, or no, the Free Worlds League. And then each of the different clans in Scotland would be the different houses involved in it.
That's close. Yeah, it's as good an explanation as any. Like, that's, as long as that lets you understand how the Merrick or the Free Worlds League government is run, then that's as good as any answer. And that's the other thing, the calling it Merrick space or the Free Worlds League, it kind of gets interchangeable. So that's another thing that gets kind of confusing. But that's kind of the way that works, where also the nationalities that the successor states kind of emulate is quite often based off of the house that rules as well.
Just before we go too far, right? I have the map up on the screen. And so as we're talking here, right, we were just talking about the Free World League and Free Worlds League, or as you said, the Merrick.
House Merrick, yeah.
House Merrick. So that's that purple section on the bottom left corner, right? We're looking at, that's where we're talking about it being, like I said, kind of like Scotland being the land mass, and then each of the different houses or the different worlds groups. I don't know.
This was Game of Thrones. The Starks would rule the north, in which case the Lyrans are in the north and they're ruling over the Lyran Commonwealth.
Yeah, okay, there you go. That's perfect comparison, right? Like, this could be like talking about
this was Game of Thrones 40 years ago. Yeah,
this would be like top left, the blue could be House Stark. Top right would be House Grey Wolf or Tully or whatever.
Can we try to keep some form of a fiction as a baseline? Because we're going to confuse the heck out of people. Because not everybody's read Game of Thrones. Not everybody's watched Outlander. Not everybody has. Can we pick one thing and stick with it?
Why? You really don't listen to our videos, because this is how Laura and I talk.
This is strictly normal for them.
Oh, I know, but it's the same thing. Stop saying house and just throw it in anywhere, because the houses are like saying Merrick. Well, one's the ruler and then you have these houses. Well, people are going to start mixing up House Karita, House Merrick, House with these little minor houses that you're talking about. So you're going to get more confused is what I'm concerned with. And then the conversation's never going to evolve into what you're hoping for.
Again, have you never listened to their podcast? It starts confused and it just goes all
no
over.
More than they listen to ours.
Boy.
No, okay, you're there when we're recording. Heather has hardly listened to any of our stuff.
Anyway, getting us back on track, there are five major houses of the Inner Sphere, and they divide up the whole known galaxy. Outside of those houses is a bunch of pirate or periphery realms that dot known space near the outskirts beyond the great unknown.
So this is, like, when we're talking in the book, because a couple times in the book, they've talked about the periphery, and I've always been saying, well, I don't know what this means. So looking at this map, all these like tannish colored ones, tannish, grayish, tan, whatever, around the outside of the main circle are these periphery states.
Yeah, it's a generic term for any of the lesser known spaces that usually have a small grouping of planets under a co-defense pact kind of thing.
Okay, so what we can maybe talk a little bit more about that when we get into actually the space that our story is taking place in, because that's Oberon, or Hendrick is from Oberon 5, which is in one of the the periphery states.
Correct, up near the top of the map.
Yeah, up near the top of the map. Okay, so each of these, like Lee was saying, each one of the inner sphere successor states, did I get that right?
Yep.
Inner sphere successor states, so the five main colors there, each one is kind of modeled after the culture or the family, the main family, like the Steiner or other families for that state.
Yes, essentially that's what it gets broken down to.
Okay, so starting at the Free World League from the purple, working our way around, because then when we get back up to the Lyran, we can get a little bit closer to how that's all plays into our story. This is the Free World League is the one that's made up of a whole bunch of different groups.
Correct.
And do they have a specific type of, like I'm thinking when we say Steiner, we think German. Does the Free Worlds League have a common umbrella for a culture, or is it just like wishy-washy?
They're probably the most hodgepodge of all of them because they're individual states. So some of them are based off of Latin American style culture. It's almost like the United States would be another good example of it, because it's a bunch of states that have agreed to work together under one ruler, but they don't always get along. Like they fight with each other almost as much as they do with anyone else.
Yeah, I would have described the Federated Suns more like the states, but Free Worlds League, I would say more like if Scotland was a bunch of the different countries in the European Union, that's what it would be. They fight with themselves all the time, unless there's somebody outside to fight with.
So they're combined together to keep each other safe because they're in the same vicinity, but in the long run, they're still trying to become the powerhouse of that area.
There's a lot of political intrigue between the states.
But yeah, without getting into a two-hour podcast about just the Free Worlds League, that basically covers it.
Okay. So then going to the right, or I guess if we're talking map, that's going to the east, the green one.
So counterclockwise.
Yeah, counterclockwise.
This is the Capella Confederation that would be primarily off of Chinese descent.
So that
runs very much like North Korea.
Yeah, if China and North Korea had a baby, this would be it.
I was going to say that. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
The state is everything.
Yeah, honor, loyalty, yeah.
And the leader of the state is a god, as far as his subordinates are concerned.
Okay, so it's they're part of this state, and they are, their whole goal as individuals is to support this leader or the main house.
Yep.
House whether they agree to it or not.
Right. Whether they agree to it. Yeah.
And you don't say you don't agree to it to anyone,
because or you disappear in the night.
Yeah. There's spies everywhere. It's like North Korea or Chinese. And with the attitude of everything belongs to the state, including you. You are not an individual. You belong to the state. And if the great glorious leader decides that your house has to become a parking lot, you better hope that you moved before the bulldozer showed up, because they're not going to stop.
Okay, that doesn't sound fun, but...
And this is why, by and large, most people dislike the Capella Confederation.
Okay, so that's the Capella Confederation. And what did you say the main house is there?
Liao.
Okay. All right. Okay. And our big yellow brother right here. The biggest, looks like the biggest sucker on the map.
This would be the Federated Sons, led by House Davian. Essentially, more or less modeled after the Americas, I'm assuming.
I always saw them as more English, because they have a royal family. English. No, I know, but they have a royal family.
Hey.
They have a royal family. It's the there's no elected officials when it comes to the upper, the monarchy. It's handed down to the next. They have way more freedoms. They're way more organized. The way it's turned out in the first few books, they're kind of the way everybody sees as the good guys. Later on, some of their interference with other states starts becoming a little bit more apparent, which is definitely an American thing.
Well, and we haven't gotten to that. Like, we haven't, other than talking about the main, the Lyran Commonwealth and bringing up the Draconis Combine, we haven't heard anything about this state.
As the books go on, as you follow the timeline through, the focus becomes very heavily on the Federated Sons. So you'll find out, like, there's a massive war between the Federated Sons and the Capellan Confederations coming up, which is a phenomenal book. Like, the run is fantastic. It's my favorite era. This is actually why this era is my favorite, is the political intrigue and the wars are so well done.
So then, looking at the red, my favorite color, but I don't think it's my favorite house for what I know of them. Oh, we didn't talk about the... Or maybe you did. For the Federated Sons, who's the main house there?
House Davian. Brett brought it up right at the very beginning.
Right. Yeah. Yes, yes. Right. So the red one, this is the last one before we actually get into a little bit more detailed about a specific state. Who's the main house of this state?
So this is the Draconis Combine, led by House Kurita, the Grand Coordinator.
The Grand Coordinator. So that makes me think, again, like another...
Very feudal Japan. The emperor is in charge, but it's the emperor is ruling for our best interest. The state is all-powerful, but everybody works towards the betterment of the state because the state then turns around and looks after you.
Okay, so how does this, the Draconis Combine, compare to the... Don't tell me. Shut up, Laura.
The Capellans.
The Capellans. That's it. Yeah. So that's why she's there.
Capellans. Not Camellans. The Capellans.
I said Capellans. I didn't say Camellans.
Pretty close. So how they compare is basically the Draconis Combine has... I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it because there is very similar comparisons. Other than for the most part, you don't disappear. If you voice against the state, nobody wants to voice against the state here because everything is honor based, right? Very Japanese honor system. So as long as everybody acts honorably, you're good to go, right?
For the greater good, the state is all powerful. You're doing your best to bring honor to your family and your nation. And it steps up from there in the Draconis Combine. Everybody is working towards a singular nation of goals. In the Capellan Confederation, it's not everybody from the bottom working up, it's the top dictating down, and this is what you do or you disappear.
So like the Draconis Combine could, like you were saying, like Japan, but also kind of like the social states or the social countries like Finland, right? Where everybody is working for the state because the state gives you back what you need. And
yeah, but I would think feudal Japan is almost the exact mentality of this entire state. So it's not a mixture really of cultures. It is feudal Japan.
Of all of the states, this is the most singular focused one that could be described as just a one mindset.
Okay. That's my brain already hurts. Jesus Christ.
This is a huge topic. We could talk about this for days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we're not going.
I know you have. I've heard some of your conversations talking about this, and every single time we get back with someone that you were talking about it, you like end up back in the same conversation. So I could totally see it being that. But I know, like, it's helping me understand going into this, I had no idea that the Inner Sphere was literally the five states, right? I didn't understand that or what the periphery is. So being able to talk about it and look at, like, oh, okay, we have, where I'm showing on the map now, the Lyran Commonwealth, which in later parts of the storyline is called the Lyran Alliance, but it's really important to remember it's the Lyran Commonwealth now, but it's where it's situated, that it's in the Inner Sphere and that it's actually a circle with these other states around the outside. While we were sitting out there talking about it, I was like, periphery. Oh, yeah, around the outside. Duh.
So if it helps you wrap your mind around it, the dot at the very, very middle of the map is Terra. That is where human space started, human race started. And then everything moved out in a sphere growing ever bigger through discovered known space. That's why it's called the inner sphere.
So the Terra is kind of, it's not
Earth. It's Earth,
it's
yeah.
Earth, but okay, so, and this is where my logic dictates does not work in this, because I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense, because none of these are actual planets that we know of, right? So
but it's a fictional universe, so it works.
Right. So you're saying the...
it's fiction. Of course it works.
Of course it works. We can make anything work in fiction. So Terra is Earth. And then as they kind of explored, they found the new worlds, and then the different successor states started to develop.
Yeah.
The different houses of authority and power started building influence, and things developed, and then it went into the Star League, and then they split, and yeah, that's a whole different day.
Yeah.
But this is where it started, right here in the middle. But we're talking right now for our book is this lovely blue area up here in the top left. So that's the Lyran Commonwealth. Now, who's the main house for the Lyran Commonwealth?
House Steiner leads the Lyran Commonwealth. It is very like Germanic descent, but I have always looked at it as kind of, while Lee said the Federated Suns kind of strikes him as Britain. The British UK conglomerate is kind of what I've always thought of the Lyran Commonwealth as. They're a bunch of allied states or small countries that work together, but are under a single monarchy ruler.
Okay, I'm trying to process that. It's not that I don't understand it. I'm just like, okay.
Think UK, Britain, Scotland, Canada, Australia are all part of the British Empire.
Okay. So that would be like the different provinces in
here. If our queen actually, or I guess king now, but if he was actually still an active head of state ruling over all of it.
Right. Okay. So Laura, do you have any questions or wonderings about this before we get into the area of the map that's specific to the book?
Not for specific to the book. I have, because you've said before, I know a little bit more. So I know that there's marriages between different houses.
Eventually. Right now there's...
No. It's just major and minor wars.
Yeah, there have been three major wars up until this point. The first, the second, and the third succession war. That's part of why they're called the succession states. And the first and second succession wars were brutal. There were nukes. There was nerve gas. There was released diseases. Weapons that we haven't even thought of. Used on the populations, trying to gain control of everybody, pretty much, to become the new ruler of Earth.
And targeting of technological areas so that if they couldn't have it, well, the enemy wasn't going to have it either.
Yeah. So this is a big pause around this time in the 3000s to about 3030, there was a big pause where, and a little bit before that, because they had knocked themselves almost back down to the Stone Age, right? They were... prior 20th century technology in a lot of the planets. So the big wars had stopped and they were mostly just little skirmishes. While the successor states were mainly trying to recover the technology so they could start these big wars up again.
Wow.
So while they have interstellar travel, you're looking at 1900s technology level on most planets.
Well, that's one thing with Trawl that we've found is that like there's supposed to be a dome over the city. And it never got there because they don't have the resources and they don't have the technology for it over Sargad. So that was, and the fact that the concrete that they use is stuff that we use here on Earth now. I was like, wow, I was expecting some pretty more advanced technology and usage of things considering it's 3,000, it's 1,000 years in the future.
Explains why in the books along the periphery edge, there's pirate raidings are more prominent because the houses can't defend their outer reaches.
Yeah, they pretty much only have good sized armies on the really important planets on the borders. Trull is not actually on the border. It's a good distance in.
Yeah.
But it's not an important planet either, really. So why would they even have something on that planet?
Yep. But yeah, military-wise, that's part of the reason why the Grey Death Legion are there. Well, they're not the Grey Death Legion at the but the reason why they had them there, because mercenaries become a hugely important part of the defense and offense of these planets, because it was way easier to hire a private company to do it than it was to pay to move your own troops and risk starting a war, right? You send your frontline troops in to do a water purification raid to steal water or equipment so you could, one of your other planets goes in and the other country loses their minds because you sent the U.S. Marines in, versus hiring some three mech jerk to go in and do it and then to claim they didn't work for you in the first place. You know, plausible deniability.
If they something happens to them, they get captured or whatever, you can be like, oh, well, I don't even know, right? That's
when you were talking about us coming to join the show tonight, I was actually thinking about this. One of the biggest things with the technology that comes out is, while we have fusion reactors on these mechs, but you have guys that don't have any technology to be able to repair or fix these things, right? Trell probably doesn't have the people that can fix a battle mech.
Nope.
So they have to get... So they bring these mercs in, and the mercs have to set up their own shop because they're the ones who can fix it, but they're doing, you know, bubble gum and duct tape to keep their mechs together. And
they're hoping to get paid for a contract and be remote enough that it justifies their contract, but not important enough that they actually have to fight anything.
Yeah, it's really interesting how this is why this era is so amazing, because it really gives you the feel as to, you know, as a mercenary unit, are you going to make enough money to be able to fix your mechs or pay your troops, or are you going to go bankrupt in 3 months? There's no guarantees, even if technology. You go from one planet to another planet, and next thing you know is they don't have any technology compared to what you have.
And if you need to get friends or reinforcements, it's minimum 2, 3, 5 jumps away, and each jump takes a week to 2 weeks or more. Could be a long time before anybody's coming to see you.
Well, yeah. Like we were, Tor... we're not that far into the book, but the fact that he went from doing a certain type of job to running out of money and having to become a pilot for hire kind of talks about what Lee was saying, that you had to do what you had to, or they have to do what they have to do. And you don't always know if you're going to have the resources to do what you need to do.
Yeah, if you think of Tor like a ship's captain, well, the bank owns most of his ship and he was doing what he could to try and stay afloat.
And so he went to the underworld to start selling or start doing jobs that no one else wants to take on to be able to pay that bank back.
Because the bank still wants its monthly mortgage payment.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And they don't much care how you get the money.
Nope.
And they also touch on the technology that Carlisle's commandos brought a lot of the technology to the planet for them to use. And now that the pirates have taken over, Grayson doesn't have half the resources at his fingertips. He's got to figure out, basically, find the duct tape to put the mechs back together.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while. Sorry, go ahead.
The computer systems, like, they're slow and out of date.
Yeah, I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while since I read the book, but I believe in the early chapters it says, you know, they brought some technical knowledge and some tools and some skills, but 3/4 or more of their staff was just locals that they were like, hey, take this tool, do this. This is how it makes it fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had, from what I remember, and Laura, you can maybe add a little bit more to this, like... Carlisle Commandos actually had a decent relationship with the locals until the deal with Hendrix came out. They had hired the locals to do even some of their more basic stuff. I'm just throwing this out. I don't remember if this was in there, but like doing laundry, cooking, mowing the grass per se. I know they don't have any grass, but like doing that kind of small stuff.
No, absolutely. And I'm pretty sure Carlisle was just thinking of the best for the planet when he made this deal with the pirates, because he knew they were leaving and he kind of didn't want to leave the planet high and dry. So he hires the pirates, maybe not knowing the history that these pirates have been raiding this planet before they got there.
Well, then one of the great phrases in Battletech is a pirate is just a mercenary unit down on its luck.
I think Hendrick is much down on his luck from the stories we've heard of him. He's not exactly, I don't know much about Carlisle, but I'd rather take him over Hendrick any day.
Yeah. Well, and then talking about Tor and Lori, like they're essentially, they're mercenaries down on their luck, so they got hired on with the pirates.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that about Lori, remember? She's from Sargerdian. I can't say the name, like the world she's from. She was taken, right? They killed her parents and the neighbors saved her. And so she really didn't have a choice.
Sigurd? C-I-G-U-R-D?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Sigurd?
Yeah, Sigurd. So, it's one of the planets in the Oberon Confederation up near the north.
So, talking about that, let's kind of zoom in on our the area that we're talking about for the book, right? So, yeah, she's from the planet. It's up in that the area up the second, the middle blob, right above Oberon 6. That's Oberon 6. So, she was taken. It wasn't even her choice. But yeah, mercenaries who really can't do anything else, but it's still, I don't know, it's, yeah. I totally lost where I was going with that.
But no, she was totally forced into learning how to be a mech pilot.
Yeah.
But as we learn a little bit more about her, she's mercenary. She doesn't like doing, the killing. Like, I've only got so far in the book, and she doesn't want to kill her fellow pilot. Even though he's fighting essentially for the wrong side, quote unquote. Like, she'd rather capture him and bring him over to their side so they can be part of the Trell group.
Right, which is I thought that was kind of cool. It really shows what kind of a character she is. But looking at all of this stuff, right, like talking about the countries, this is where some of it I'm like, okay, even more. So, confused about it. So we have Trell, which is almost literally in the smack dab middle of the screen there. So that's in one of the provinces in the Lyran Commonwealth. And you said that, kind of each province has, their main world that is kind of in charge of that, or am I wrong?
Yeah, it's sort of a province. This one is kind of a bunch of little minor places that's not... It's so far out in the middle of nowhere and so unimportant that it doesn't actually have a regional center.
Okay. So it doesn't have, if we look down, I'm just going down to one of the other ones, this state here, right below where the Trell province, yes, air quotes, province is. This one down here would have the one that has the multi-circle with Sudeten, which makes sense for a German name.
Yeah, the Tamar Domains is one of the bigger ones.
Okay. So that, they have their own special head of state.
And I'm pretty sure Sudeten is actually the capital of it.
Okay.
Well, and then cool. There's Tamar closer to the Draconis Combine as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, that would essentially be the capital of that particular district. Whereas, where Trell is, it's so far out, they're kind of left to their own devices.
That's the outer provinces of the country. Nobody really goes there.
It's, look, people are going to shoot me for this, but it's kind of none of it.
And I was thinking, yeah.
I'm not trying to say that it's not important, but I'm just saying...
It does put a point of reference in it. The book is taking place in a part of space that is very far removed from anywhere important. It's way out there. It's kind of unimportant, but it's close enough to a major border that they could justify the defense cost of having a merc lance here, and it's close enough to the pirates, the periphery realms, that maybe you want to have it. So it's a good setting to have a small scale start of an adventure.
Yeah, it makes sense. And looking at this, when we were talking about the movement of spaceships, I can't remember where Tor's ship... No, it would have been from Oberon, right? To Trell.
They didn't jump directly.
No.
But that's where they were going from Oberon to Trell, and they made all of those different stops, they would have had to make with their jumps. But it really makes it even harder for me to believe that it wasn't pre-planned by someone to take Tor's ship. Because just looking at Oberon to Trell, there's essentially in the line, there's seven planets in between there, plus all of the other things that are around there. So for someone to have found him, his ship, without having the pre-existing knowledge of where he was going.
And if anything, that would have been like a trade route. Oberon being the capital of the Oberon Confederate would have been kind of like, here's a trade route into the Lyran Commonwealth to get more supplies and more stock and more trading partners and stuff like that.
Right, but he was carrying things that he shouldn't have been carrying, so I don't think he would have been going on a direct path.
Well, the thing is, there's only so many places you can go out here. Because if your jump drive goes wrong, you're stranded. Nobody is ever going to find you.
Yeah, and they're not specifically planets that you jump to.
These are basically solar systems.
They're like space stations.
Yeah, you're jumping out.
Where you can recharge your jump.
Yeah, exactly. It's not... and you're not to a station. You're actually to a spot where there's usually nothing. It's a safe spot without any asteroids and all that. Because you just appear. It's not like you show up. You just appear. And then you put out these gigantic sails.
Wait. It's not that you show up, it's you just appear. Is that not the exact same thing?
No.
You don't necessarily sail in. You're not there, the next second you are.
You teleport there. And then you deploy these gigantic sails, they're solar sails, that collect the sunlight and recharge your battery so that after a couple of weeks, you can pull in your sail and jump again. And the thing is only certain stars have locations where it's safe to do so. And remember when we were talking about the breakdown of technology, jump ships are absolutely invaluable because without them, billions of people will starve or run out of water or won't get air or whatever. Trade stops completely. Because other than that, other than jump ships, there is no way to get from planet to solar system to solar system. So while if you look at the map here, for Oberon to Butehold, and then from Butehold to any other planet towards the inner sphere is further than a single jump. So they're having to hit a unmarked star system to recharge their jump ability, which means if this, like Brett was saying, if the sails break or your jump drive breaks, you're screwed because people may not even come back to the system that you chose to use. And also remember, this is a two-dimensional example of what should be a three-dimensional globe. So you kind of have to really, jump ships are almost to the level of magic. Nobody attacks a jump ship in this era, because it is paramount to genocide.
Well, but that's not the, at the beginning of the book, the way that Tor tells it is that he was supposed to be getting mechs. I'm trying to remember, because his ship, like, he wasn't the way, and Laura, you can, I'm lost again about that, but like I was understanding it that he didn't expect this to happen because they came in and took over the ship.
Well, right. And that's what League was saying. Like, you pick a flight path and you find your solar systems that you jump into, and probably 9 times out of 10, you jump in and you're by yourself. So the fact that he jumps into one of these probably unmarked solar systems to recharge and there's somebody waiting for him and they hijack him is absolutely unexpected, which also leads to what you were saying about somebody knew the path he was taking.
Looking at this, thinking a 3D space, right? It's, you're not going to be able to take like a ruler, even taking a ruler from Oberon to Trell, there's planets in the way, right? You can't take a direct path. And like you were saying, you have to be able to get somewhere so that you can get the solar power to be able to recharge your ship. So you have to go certain areas, but he's also doing something very illegal. So it's not like he's going to be, it's like a drug dealer who's running drugs across the border. They're not going to try and do it a typical way.
The only thing there's no cops out here.
No, and I know that.
Yeah,
there's no one to
even
stop.
Smuggling, they absolutely take the normal trade routes because it is better to get caught doing something wrong when something goes bad than to never get found again.
I think to an extent, I would still think that he would not want to do like the main trade routes. Right? Like maybe traveling a back range road here in Alberta, right? A range road or a township road.
Think of it more like traveling through the mountains. There is only one road. If you go off of it, you're just screwed.
They will never find you again. And while you're saying that, we're saying from what we've read, this is the way they do, right? Even smugglers, they don't smuggle it by taking a back road to get there. They smuggle it by jumping in at weird times, jumping into a system that is They have things called pirate points, which there's safe places to jump to, and then there's other places that aren't really safe to jump into that solar system, where if you make one calculation wrong, you appear inside an asteroid.
But they're still going to the same systems.
But they go to that point where nobody else would go because it's too dangerous. They would jump there. Because even if something goes wrong, at least they're in the same solar system.
And that's what I get. Like, I'm not saying they're going to Trell and they're going to go over to this wide open white space over here. I didn't mean that. Like, I was like, literally what you're saying, that completely explains what I'm trying to say, is that they're going to be where people, like, if they break down, someone would find them, but they're going to be using these pirate charging stations, like you, or whatever you just said they were, right? I'd rather do that than I'd rather go to the backcountry gas station than go to the main gas station in town. No?
They don't necessarily even go to a gas station when they show up. They just sort of show up, they unroll their solar charger, and then they're gone, and most of the time nobody even knows they were there unless they try to announce themselves.
But it's still a pirate area that they know is safe, and it's not going to have some major patrol come through. Kind of thing. No. And drug dealers normally don't. Well, okay, I don't know this for a fact.
You're reading too much into it. You're trying to break it down in a way that the books and the fluff never go to.
No, yeah, in this area, you maybe get a ship coming through once or twice a year, period.
So, and this is, we're talking a light year away from a planet. Like, they're sitting on the very edge of the solar system. They don't go anywhere near the habited planets. So they just jump there, they open up their sails. People will never know that they were there, because it takes a year for any information to get from the jump point to the planet, unless they were to book it in. There is some places that are a little bit closer that are months away, but or weeks. But for the most part, they may never even know that he was ever there, because nobody's looking. Remember also the technology. They don't have ships waiting at the points, waiting to check customs or anything like that. Smugglers, the only time they got to start worrying is when they get to the more habited areas closer to the core, closer to Earth.
They don't cover it in the book, I'm pretty sure, but roughly speaking, round trip from Trell to Oberon back to Trell is about 5 to 6 months' time.
Well, and we looked that up. We talked about that in the distance, Laura, do you remember?
Yeah.
Because we were trying to, we're like, well, how far is it? I don't understand this.
The other major problem is, and we've said it before, you can't apply real-world logic to Battletech books.
No, you'll drive yourself mental.
Yeah.
Trying to do that. Even
so
logic.
Yeah, right? So in my head with these jumps, I picture like our solar system. You could have a pirate appear out somewhere by Jupiter, unfurl their sails, recharge their stuff for the week, whatever it takes, and then leave. And we'd never know.
The point Lee was getting at.
Yeah, and a second pirate could jump in on the other side of the planet, and the two pirates wouldn't even know that they're there because the planet's in the way.
That's one
great synopsis.
Yeah. And most of the time they try to go to places that gravity has no effect whatsoever, because that can screw up the calculations for the jump. The jumps are extremely technical, right? A lot of the time of them sitting there charging, they're recalculating what the next jump is, because they have to take galactic drift into account, where the planets are, where the recorded asteroids and comets are coming through. It's a huge amount of data to try to get to the specific point that they can jump to without getting messed up, as well as quite often making sure that nobody else is jumping to that location at the same
yeah.
So that aside, because we're now kind of getting off, like, this is great, but I think we're kind of getting off some of the other questions that you wanted to ask.
No, not really.
This is actually kind of in line with it works because distances between the planets within the districts and the factions themselves, like, it's hard to picture.
It is very hard.
Yeah, the space is just so vast, and the travel times are so immense and limited, because you can only jump from one point to a second point, and then you're charging, and then you're trying to send off a message. If something goes bad, maybe somebody gets a message, maybe they don't. Maybe somebody comes by in a year to help you, maybe they don't. Did you have enough food and water, or did you all starve to death by the time somebody shows up?
It's about 100 light years between Trell 1 and and Oberon, isn't it?
Take a look at the legend on the bottom left.
Oh, I know. I was just saying the girls that worked it out.
Well, that's what I literally just pulled up our notes from the different podcasts, and I could have sworn we had this written down. Oh no, we do. Yeah. So, like what Trell? No, we have Trell to Terra. Trell to Terra is 85 light years.
No.
No.
Not even close. It's way further than, because if you look at the scale on here, Trell to Winfield is almost 30 light years. Yeah, it's almost 30 light years. You're looking at almost three, you got one, three, you're almost 450 light years away from Earth to Trell 1.
Trell to Winfield is about 30 light years.
Yeah.
Because I have this map printed out on my wall, and it is almost the size of a window. And it says 1 centimeter is 30 light years. 1 centimeter is about the width of my thumb, and that is about the distance on the map between those two planets.
Yeah, and I'm just using the legend of the map that Heather's showing everybody. Sorry, BB1.
same map, I just have it printed out.
The entire legend they have there from 0 to 150 light years is pretty much from Earth to Port Moresby in the thumb there. And then another 150 to Tamar. And then about three quarters of one of those scales, maybe half to Trell 1.
Like 400, 420.
Yeah. So it's a huge distance, which is why I was saying it was about 100 to Oberon from Trell.
And that's just straight as a crow would fly.
Yeah.
So
you got to take it from planet to planet, and then, it makes it more distance.
And it's like 2 weeks for every 30 light years you jump. Because you jump, you stop, you charge, which takes approximately 2 weeks, depending on the star that you're... Then you get to jump again instantaneously. And then you've got another 2 weeks of sitting and waiting. So, yeah, the travel in the inner sphere is brutally slow, which is another reason why jump ships are so important, because you have to have these great trains. You know, they're all going one direction, and the jump ships are also going in the other direction, back and forth and back and forth, to make anything happen in any realistic amount of time. Because to even get a message from, let's say, Earth out to Trell, would take, because I think it's 50 light years for a hyperpulse generator message, is going to take six jumps or six shots to get there, right? So that's a heck of a lot of time before even a message gets sent. There's no live conversations happening.
Yeah, I have no idea where we got our math or why it's so horrible.
It's all right.
I'm looking at it and I'm like, I'm going to need to go back and listen to that podcast to see what we said.
Because if you think about it, you've gone from having no interest in this game at all 15 years ago to meeting me.
I thought it was ridiculous, and I made fun of a guy I dated because of it. So, hey.
Yeah, you met me. I'm a massive Battletech nerd, and I have all these books and minis and all that kind of stuff. And you learned how to play the game, not, you know, willing to learn. You joined Battletech League, and you learned how to play the game. None of that. Nothing that I showed you or Battletech League or just Battletech in general shows you puts you ready for this stuff.
Well,
the fluff, the text, the distances, because nothing about a jump ship.
Story.
Nothing about a jump ship is even closely relatable to a battle mech. Right?
Well, and for me, like, I don't know about Laura, but for me, I was like, until I started I know for a fact Laura's not like this, but only because, let me finish what I'm saying before you. when I am, like, was starting to play League with you, or even just games in general, I was like, oh, I don't need to know this shit. Like, whatever. I've even said it in our podcast in one of our earlier videos. I'm like, I don't need to know all the fluff. It doesn't make a difference. And then as we start reading, I'm like, damn, I don't know what this means. I don't know what this... I had no idea I just hit my desk. I had no idea the differences in the mechs, and like even going light, medium, heavy assault, even my mechs the last couple of years, I never really looked into it. Now I'm like, ooh, this stuff is cool. I need to learn more.
I mentioned that to you, I think, 14 years ago.
Shut up.
Your geek level has improved.
Yes, you've reached level 2. Improved. You've reached level 2. Wait until you start reading my technical manuals. And
yeah.
I think I might have the Lyrian Commonwealth source book that is for this era.
Reading the technical manuals is so much fun.
Read the 20-year update. The 20-year update is an amazing book.
Yeah, we'll see. Right? We'll see.
Like get her to read some of the source novels and then the update.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. I want to get her completely hooked on these novels. And then she's going to go, what about this and this and this? And then I can show her these books that answer those questions, right? Because this game is absolutely off the charts amazing about the fact they have a 1,000-year history for 5 different factions and the periphery states and the clans, 300-year history for the clans, in individual books, all written out with little tidbits of information and major battles and all this stuff. You can get yourself lost for months just reading about what happened in the Third Succession War. It's just, it's an amazing amount. But the thing is, you don't have to either. You could just play the board game.
Like, well, that's it, right? I didn't the last 14 almost, years. Well, 15 years. What?
In 14 years, you've ignored me.
No, it's actually closer to 15, dear.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was like, oh, I don't need to know this stuff. I can play the game quite easily. And now I'm like, okay, well, I need to know a little bit more. And then I'm like, I need to know a little bit more and a little bit more. And now I'm like, holy crow. Now I'm going down this damn hole. What's that?
Rabbit hole.
That's exactly. I'm like, what's the term? I know it's something whole. And don't say anything, either of you boys or Laura.
But here's one of the amazing things about that, Heather. You are going down the rabbit hole about a single planet in the middle of bootfook nowhere that has no effect on the rest of the inner sphere. And there is dozens of novels with stuff like that, or that involve gigantic battles between one house and the other house, or the houses versus the clans. It goes from one individual planet to another battle on one little individual planet. And then you start to make connections. Oh, I know about that guy, or I know about that place, or I've heard about that place before. Like Butte Hold, you'll remember that forever, right? Trail 1, you'll remember that.
Yeah.
I did not think that's what it was called.
Yeah. Same thing, Somerset. The cartoon was based off of a place called Somerset, because it's the Somerset Strikers. And I know
the main character was from there.
Yeah. Which is just on the other side of the Dark Nebula from Trail.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there is so many really interesting little tidbits in Battletech and in the overall lore. Like, wait until you see some of the stuff that happens in some, like, the Warrior series, or even following on further with the Grey Death Legion stuff, or the complete mind-bending with the Wolf's Dragoon, which is another mercenary unit that you're going to get interested in, right? As well as the fact that this is one of the best gender equality games 40 years before everybody thought it was necessary. Some of the greatest mech warriors or characters in the books in the entire game are women, right?
Well, that's one thing Laura and I both said when we met Lori. It's like, I was not expecting a woman to step out of that mech.
Yeah. Wait till you meet Cassie in the Caballero Comanchos books.
Ooh. Yeah, that's like 30-ish years down the timeline, though.
I'm like,
well, that's, they have lots to get there.
30-ish years for us to get there, then. Because it's taken us how many months to do this book talk, and we're only on to book 2 of this book?
Yeah, but you know, you might not do a book talk for every one. Or you'll read it first and then read it again for part of the book talk.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
It's exciting. It is really exciting for me personally until you hit the Jihad.
Yeah, it's funny how the timeline goes to like 3067 and then 3100s.
Well, there is novels now. There's some novels that flesh it out. It's just, I really think the early stuff did the best job of making you feel like you were part of this universe. And the nitty gritty parts, like when, it's just amazing how well the initial books get you hooked on the universe. And then you want to know more, like what you were doing here with this conversation. You want to know more about the universe that your book set.
Well, and that's a cool thing is, right? I look at other book series, they don't have this backstory. Like you were saying, they don't have this whole thing fished out, or as it's slowly being figured out over time. It's just really cool that we can, if we do the math correctly, figure out technically, untechnically, I don't have even like Wheel of Time, you don't have those kinds of backstories. Just before we say goodnight, I wanted to ask you guys and our listeners for the book so far. No, wait, that's not a question I want to ask. I was like, that makes no sense.
Dirty.
Purple.
42.
It's all about that hole we were talking about.
Right? Laura, we need a question. I had a question and I forget what.
I don't know. I don't read minds. We covered this at the very beginning. I don't read minds. I'd be curious to know from the listeners, because I'm sure the guys will tell us anyway. Which house faction is everybody's favorites? Like, why do you prefer, Draconis Combine? Why do you prefer the Lyrans? Like, if you play the game, why do you choose mechs from each faction?
There's at least once, Brett. You go ahead. Go first, sir.
Okay, so Clan Jade Falcon is my ultimate favorite house out of any of the factions because I read the Phoenix Rising first, the Phoenix Reborn trilogy first, and then I read Decisions at Thunder Rift, and I was hooked on the mercenary life in the Grey Death Legion specifically. But if I had to pick an Inner Sphere faction, I would say the Federated Sons and House Davian, because they've been written as pretty much the good guys of the universe for most of the time.
So for me, it's actually pretty complicated.
When are you not?
Yes, I'm always complicated. So for me, I love samurai. I think they're amazing. So I was originally really into the Draconis Combined. And then I saw some of the stuff they do in the storyline is very harsh, because once again, everything's honor-based and mercenaries selling your soul or your combat skills for money is very dishonorable. So Draconis Combined does not treat mercs well. So I was like, I couldn't morally handle that if I was a member of the Draconis Combined military. I just couldn't handle it. I'd be totally offended by making a deal with somebody and then screwing them over. So I was like, okay, if I was one of those, I would leave. I wouldn't be able to handle that. So then I became what they call an expatriated Draconis Combined. I would go to the Federated Sons because they usually keep their deals. Like Brett said, they're the good guys for the most part. And then I also love Merrick, because you can pretty much do whatever the hell you want. As long as you don't piss off the overall group, you can do whatever the hell you want with the Free Worlds League. So all three of them are kind of in my wheelhouse, though if I had to pick one, it would be the Federated Sons. As for the clans, I am an absolute diehard Canadian, so I go Ghost Bears because they're gigantic polar bears.
Well, let's not go into the clans, because I don't know anything about them, and I haven't even been introduced to them yet, really. Well,
you got 30 years before that happens.
Yeah, or roughly 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, League. Oh, woohoo. I didn't mean that sounded really bad. That's not what I meant.
And I meant
woohoo, like, clans. I don't want to add something else to my brain. But anyways, that sounded really bitchy.
So there's why
just I learn the game first and then learn the lore after. It seems to be working for you so far.
Pick a favorite color. Just pick a favorite color. Whichever one of these is your favorite color, learn about it. Right? I think I have the Draconis Combine house book here. You can read that and learn about the red guy. Right?
No, and I'm learning about the Lyran right now because that's what the book is connected to. Why would I add something else to try and wrap my brain around?
You like the red. You like red.
But like I can't even wrap my head around this. I'm not adding something else to my plate.
Yeah. So don't worry, listeners. Someday she'll pick a side.
It might even be yours once in a while.
No,
I'm just married to him.
See, that's why I covered 3/5 with my choice. So I've got a decent chance she'll pick at least one of them. Yeah, well, you're bound to pick one of the three that I like.
Did you say Lyran?
No.
So there you go. Right now, that's my faction.
Did you not play Lyran last year?
I did.
No, she went Free Roslog Republic.
Oh, that's right. I didn't play Lyran, but someone stole it from me.
Yeah, and they don't exist yet. Because that gets explained later.
Anyways, you guys are dorks.
Dark lover.
And I say that in a very loving and appreciative manner. All right, Laura, do you want to send us off? Because I've done way more of the talk. Well, typical, but I've done like 90% of our talking.
That's okay. I don't mind. I'm still not comfortable talking.
Hey, you're getting there. You're getting there. It's better when we're in the room together. It works out way better because we aren't talking over top of each other.
Well, it's not that. I'm still afraid my teeth are going to fall out.
Oh my god. You're either fine. No, I totally get it, but I need you to do a little bit of talking because I'm feeling very self-conscious for like taking control of this conversation. So
that's okay. I let you take control. But I'd say for anybody that wants to see what we're referring to, I know we're going to have some of the stuff up on the screen, but we're also going to have links to the maps in the description and maybe even some of the links to the houses for onto Sarna so you can read about how messed up each of them are. Other than that, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment on our video.
Ring that bell!
Ask us questions. We will try our best to answer them, and if we don't know how to answer them, we will ask the two fine fellows that have joined us today.
And we'll get the answer wrong, too. Don't worry about it. Guaranteed there's going to be 300 comments of people telling us that we're wrong, that the Capellan Confederation is the greatest state ever. And, you know, and that's okay. Because with Battletech, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, well, disclaimer, none of us are experts. We have a lot to learn, even though the other two guys are a wealth of information to begin with, because they have decades of knowledge before Heather and I have even started playing the game.
You just called us old.
Well, if I mean, she's not necessarily wrong. I introduced her to it like 20 years ago.
Yeah, no, I know. I realized I've been playing this game for over 30.
Yeah, I was introduced to this. I was like, oh yeah, 20 years ago for me too. I never tried to play it back then, but...
I was introduced to it over 20 years ago.
I was rounding.
I know. It was pre-child.
And he just turned 20, if you can't keep track, Brett.
And like 9 days ago.
Yep.
Anywho. Laura, say thank you.
Thank you. No, once again, thank you everybody for joining us. Thank you to the boys for invading our space and giving us some information.
Thank you for listening to us.
You're welcome. Happy to help.
I was going to say we always listen to you, but I listen lies. To you.
Lies. Absolute lies.
I might listen to you. I don't listen to Brett. Heather doesn't listen to you, but she might listen to Brett every once in a while.
Oh, I'll completely lay this out. I definitely listen to Brett way more than I listen to Leah. That's a job as a wife, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, thank you for coming on, guys. It's, like you said, we're going to probably have people say, oh, no, this is wrong. But just as long as you guys are respectful in your comments and try and just help educate us a little bit more, give us some links if you have them. And if there is something that we are completely off on, please feel free to help educate us.
Prove us wrong with facts.
Made up facts, because it's fiction. anyways, we're going to leave it at that. I'm going to say, see you later.
Alligator.
No one added the crocodile.
I don't do crocodiles.
I sure hope you don't.
What?
And now he pays attention.
Right?
I'm always paying attention.
Anyways, see you later, guys.
Talk to you guys all next time.
See you on the next one.
Bye-bye.